You wouldn't let me give you the praise where I think is necessary at all.
I took it. I just tell you that the commission might be short-lived.
But you're just spurring me on.
Yeah, I know that.
You said something about radio just now. I mean, I am so disappointed with the impact that radio is making on this country. I must admit that. I must get that in. I mean, I think it can do a whole lot more than what it's doing. And Dennis, you can disagree with me or not, but I think you don't belong in that group from what I can see. And I think you need to, well, there's another guy who I admire very much, but he's no name mentioned there. But I think that radio, as you mentioned it, can make a more meaningful contribution to what is our thing.
Yep.
You mentioned Stefan Walker, Dr. Stefan Walker.
Doctor, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, I'm saying that kind of encouragement is necessary for us to, just like the other Caribbean countries created something for themselves, why can't we create something for ourselves and get used to it? You know what I mean? Radio is just not to play walk-up and push-back music. Radio is to enlighten and inform.
So,
and I hope that Barbadians will get off the backsides and try to understand what purpose they're supposed to do the country. You know what I mean? What is it for? Don't stop boasting about we were in the school in the Bamarang U.S. and not making any contribution at all as they criticize people, you know, when they fail in that kind of thing.
I'm thankful that for you, sir, and the encouragement. I want to tell you one of the dreams I had. It is so far an unfulfilled dream. One of the dreams I had was to take the archives that we had at one point here. The speeches of Errol Barrow, for example, that used some of the extracts on Errol Barrow Day. The last Independence, I did something called We Were There, where I pulled the voices of Sir Grantley, his wife talking about the Lady Adams talking about the 1937 riots, various interviews that were done by some of the people who worked here, from Alfred Pragnell going back through the years. Taking those bits and pieces, taking the recordings done by GBN in Grenada, in Trinidad, and fusing it with the music of the region to create a story that says, look, Sparrow Sang Federation. This is what was happening when Sparrow Sang Federation. So you play the song, and then you play a clip from Sir Grantley saying why Jamaica went on their own, or Eric Williams saying one from Ten Leaves North. So you teach the history of the Caribbean with the music of the Caribbean. So when Chalk Dust sings, you know, whatever, or you pick something that Gabby did, you then have the voices of the people echoing the sentiments or countering the sentiments of the song. That's what I wanted to do. That's what I saw my role when I was what I was here as doing. But unfortunately, the people who made that as being worthwhile. So again, I've become the frustrated ain't go to no school because nobody owned me kind of thing. I keep telling people, I was the child nobody wanted that became the man nobody wants. It drives me to do what I do, but it leaves a hole, an echo that says, you ain't doing what you want to do. And it is unfortunate. So when I hear the discussions about this song or that song, whether you're playing too much calypso, or you're playing too much rock, or you're playing too much this, or you're playing too much that, I get this empty feeling that says, you ain't getting it. And when you employ young people to take over and lead, and they say, oh, radio is a termite-infested cupboard that's waiting to be dismantled, you go, okay, well, go home, put your foot up, watch the grass grow, and take your dog for a walk on the beach. Perhaps that will give you satisfaction. It is unfortunate, sir. The stations of the Caribbean, and I'm not picking on this one or that one or any other one, do not understand what cultural development and raising a civilization is about. That's why soldiers marched to music and people went in church and sang hymns to soothe their wounded souls. Brastax, good morning. Hey, hello. 4341790, Brastax, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, ma'am.
Can you hear me, Mr. Johnson?
Ma'am, I can hear you clearly. I don't understand why people are not hearing me, because I'm right up to the mic.
Okay. I can hear you well. I just want to speak about an incident I saw last Friday at the supermarket. I wouldn't call the supermarket's name. No, I wouldn't call the doctor's name, but I'll tell you what happened. I was in the checkout, and I heard somebody say an old woman out there collapsed and on the ground. So I hurried out and tried to see what I can do, because I myself am an old woman. So all the people from the supermarket came out, and they got her up in a chair, and she couldn't sit. She was sweating profusely. Her pulse was very weak, and she was holding her stomach. So across the road from the supermarket, there is a doctor. So I said to the supervisor, there's a doctor over there. Pop over and ask him if he can come and have a look at the old lady. By that time, we were trying to get her some water, trying to get her to speak, to say something to us. While she went to get the doctor, when she got there, you know what the doctor said, told her? The doctor said, if she can't get here, get an ambulance. I'm not leaving here. So the lady came back, and we got her loosened up her clothes and held her up, and she came around a bit, and she managed to say how old she was. She said she was not diabetic, and she said she was hypertensive. So after a while, we held her up, and she came around a bit. They had to get the shuttle from the supermarket to take her back to that same doctor. It was only 30 or 40 yards away from the supermarket. I think it was disgusting for him to refuse, because the doctor swore that he would save lives. And he refused to come over to see that poor lady. Anyway, they got her into the shuttle and take her over there to him. I don't know if she had to wait, if he saw her, but I went on my way. I was very upset, because I myself, I am 4 years older than her, and it burned my guts to see that there was no humanity, no feeling, nothing. If it was me, I'm a retired nurse, but I don't know. I can't explain it. Up to now, I don't know what happened to the old lady, how she got on, or anything like that. But I'm just saying that here in Barbados, it doesn't matter if you're a doctor, if you're a nurse, don't matter who you are. If somebody collapses and it looks like if they're going to die, please help. Because we are all human beings. We're not animals. We're human beings. Could be his mother, could be his sister, anybody. That is all I have to say. I'm not going to take any more time, but I'd like Barbados to say we are all in the same boat together, and we should love and reach out to each other and share that love that we need to share, whether you're old or young. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Which is, I'll take this opportunity to go to that letter I was referring to earlier on. The letter says, I frequently listen to Brass Tacks and believe my recent experience with the National Insurance Department should be highlighted on your program, especially as it appears we only seem to get meaningful, positive change in service from organization when problems are publicly highlighted. I normally receive my NIS pension checks by post, and when they are not delivered by Friday, December 20th, 2019, for Monday, December 23rd payment date, I visited the NIS office to inquire. I returned to the office on Monday 23rd and again on Christmas Eve because my checks had not been prepared. I must add here that I had been made aware that a number of pensioners, like myself, had not received their pension either by post nor direct deposit for the December 23rd, January 6th cycle. This situation, I was reliably informed, had also occurred the year before. Having arrived at the NIS early on Christmas Eve, I agreed with the officer working on my case to return later, as they still had not completed my check. I returned at about 11:40 a.m. to the pensions department, where two other female pensioners were waiting. One lady had been instructed to speak to the head of the department, Mr. Derek Lowe, and a lady from St. Andrew, who we learned was a diabetic, who had not eaten for 2 days. December 23rd, not up to the time on December 24th. The first lady insisted that neither she nor the other lady, for she had taken up the case of the pensioner from St. Andrew, would leave until they had received their checks. The lady from St. Andrew, while waiting, began to display signs of severe hypoglycemia and started to lose consciousness. But fortunately, my wife was able to quickly give her a glucose tablet, and an officer of the NIS gave her a soft drink and biscuits, which brought some energy back to her, preventing her from collapsing. We finally received our checks after the official closing time at the NIS that day, when Mr. Lowe, such a gentleman he is, that's my sidebar, had made arrangements for the cash officers to remain late so we should cash our December 23rd check. However, my check was less than half of my normal payment, and Mr. Lowe assured me that the difference would be paid in early January 2020. I returned to the NIS office on January 9th, 10th, and 12th, but was unsuccessful in obtaining my check for the difference owed from December 23rd. I must add here that all efforts at reaching the officer responsible for preparing the check at the number given were unsuccessful. I decided to wait for the next check cycle, but was again disappointed when my checks were not delivered on January 20th. I visited the pensions department at the NIS again today, January 20th, where I was informed on inquiring that the check for the balance of my pension due from December 23rd was not ready. This is on January 20th. And in fact, the processing work for it had not commenced. I was told that it would be started today, and the officer took my contact numbers to call me when it was ready. I then asked for the checks for the January 20th, February 3rd cycle, and was informed that some of the checks had been delayed and a batch had been sent down to the post office for delivery, and if I did not receive mine by February 24th, I should come in and inform them. It appears from my interaction with NIS personnel and pensioners in a similar position as mine that the NIS is only aware of the persons who do not receive their checks when they go into the office to make a complaint, which forces me to ask the following questions. 1. Why, if the NIS can invest over $120 million in the Four Seasons project at Paradise and $5 million more and millions more in government capital works project, can't it spend a few dollars to upgrade its very expensive software program and or to improve the knowledge and skill of the personnel using it? Surely a reported $100 million software program should be able to audit the checks it prints and collect the data as to which beneficiaries' checks had not been printed. Are pensioners who invested in the scheme their working lives not entitled to have some of their investment used to ensure they receive an efficient service? Why should a pensioner have to use his or her scarce resources to visit the NIS so often to inquire of his or her pension? The staff of the NIS Pensions Department are professional and helpful. But Dennis, this has been a most frustrating and worst depressing experience. It is demeaning to have to visit the NIS so often as if you're a beggar going cap in hand to beg for our money. We, the pensioners, have worked hard all our lives and deserve better, having contributed to ensure we would be entitled to our pension. The pensioners of this country should not be made to suffer because of inefficiencies in the management or the management systems of the NIS. Surely, a lack of finance cannot be a hindrance to solving these problems. This letter is a little long and I apologize. And I make no apology for having read it in its entirety almost, because I think it is important on a couple levels. Because up to this morning, there is a note here that says, and I will bring it up, have you ever tried calling the NIS 431-7400 number to make an inquiry? It's like pulling teeth. Try calling that number. I did on more than one occasion for more than one reason. So I know the system that says if you know your party's number, dial it now, or dial zero for the operator, and then it rings until it rings out. I want to say this about Mr. Lowe in particular, because he's a very fine gentleman. When he did corporate communications, I know if someone had a problem, I could whisk a call and I would ask a question, and if he could answer, he answered. Or sometimes he would say, this is off the record, but here's what we're doing. And I would keep its confidence. It is unfortunate that organizations employ people as corporate communication specialists who do not understand what communication means. It means speaking to those internally to understand, set up groups, establish confidence and links with the people around you so that if there's a problem, they feed you the information so that when the public calls, you can then answer the queries of the public in a manner. In other words, communicate with your public. It was interesting to see a minister of government in the newspaper quoting and saying that customs should communicate with the public more. And most of these organizations, BRA, NIS, employ corporate communication specialists. And yet, they fail to communicate. Brass Stacks, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Dennis.
Good morning, ma'am.
How are you?
I am good, until
okay,
told otherwise.
I had one thing to talk about, but while holding on, I heard that story from that lady, about the old lady that fell ill at the supermarket.
Mm-hmm.
That's really sad. That story is really sad because it seemed like you have to die now to get any attention because the outpouring of sympathy I see on Facebook and all the social media for Kobe Bryant, a man who we just know from playing basketball, and now one of our own, something happened to one of our own, and a professional doesn't want to do his part. But I just hope that she's well, and I guess he will be dealt with in some other time. Number two, I don't know if you've charged me for advertising, but we need to start supporting our own. I was in I went to see a film on Saturday evening called Joseph.
Mm-hmm.
Six of us was in the cinema, six. And if you saw the crowd that came out from Bad Boys, I mean, that's a film that has two of our local people doing so well. I mean, Allison Hines and Chantel, they did a great job in that film. I really hope that more Bajans go out and see that film. It's a really good show to watch. That's all I have to say.
Okay, ma'am. Yeah. Promotion, and you talk about the outpouring on Facebook and stuff for Kobe Bryant. And that's who the heroes are. Those are the people that are in your face there. And anyway, yeah, it's sad, but that's what media does. It makes stars. That's what communication is. You promote, and people see it. May Kobe rest in peace as well, especially going down with his daughter. Brass Stacks, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Johnson. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Right, Mr. Johnson, I was driving, definitely had to pull over when I heard you reading that letter, the person about the NAX.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Johnson, it pains me too, but I got to relate my story over to you too, right? All right, I received benefits to NAX too. But here's the note. I send it to a credit union, and with my name and the address of the credit union, Mr. Ellis, Mr. Johnson, every month the address gets mixed up. Some part of it gets dropped off, and sometimes they get my benefit 2-3 weeks late. Mr. Ellis, in 2017, I went into NAS 8 straight months to get this corrected. In 2017, 8 straight months, I went into NAS to get that problem corrected. In 2019, because I got frustrated after a little while, they had to divert it. Anyhow, in 2019, I started back. Mr. Johnson, the same thing is happening. The very same thing is happening, Mr. Johnson. And every month, I go to first of all, the customer services. Oh, this is not my problem. You got to go to registration. When you go to registration, when you're doing prank nothing, you gonna get into account. When you get on the account, you know the check, you're going through the old, but ain't going out. But I already know, ain't going out. But where is it? Mr. Ellis, I have Mr. Johnson, sorry. I have Aunt Paul, I even mentioned it earlier. I had to let go of a few.
Choice words.
You know,
Choice words.
Even choice had to tell the guard, don't touch me. You can bring the police, or bring the police, at least somebody will hear me. Mr. Johnson, all they have asked the National Insurance Team to do is to abbreviate my two middle names, because my national ID card has all my middle initials. Therefore, that will free up some space when you print my name and the address. And that will make sure that everything is on the address name. My four names is almost 32 characters. If you want space, please abbreviate the middle.
Correct.
I have asked personnel, can someone please physically stop when they're printing?
Most likely they can't.
Or they're even in there, bro. So even before you put them out to the post, can someone physically look for it? Mr. Ellis, Mr. Johnson, I tell you, when in there 8 straight months in 2017, last month, I returned to the same system, and the same thing happening again. And all you're doing is getting wrong in circles, and yet it makes no sense trying to call me, you know? Jennifer Hunt, it makes no sense trying to call nobody in there, call no phones in there, don't get answers. And when you go, look, in 2017, I went in there asking them, I want the employees to look at me and tell me, you again? I was like, you for real? This is of no fault of mine. I don't care how I go in there. I don't care how I scratch my head. I don't care how I offer a solution. Nobody is doing anything about it. And you know what? When the man comes to me, I'm going to get and go and rumble in front of the sports office and stick my back, who would come back to the office and think, me, yeah, because it's mine and they need it because they got family. I need it. All everybody do is sit them behind a computer and pass it back. I was in there after last week. Every time you go, they take my number. They take my number every single time. We can call you back. I was in there after last week. I'm going to put you over to the lady that deals with the head of printing and whatever. She's in a meeting now. I said, can someone, can I be it? All I'm hearing, she's in a meeting. She can't come now. Mr. Johnson, this is ridiculous in 2020 that I got to be suffering and you got a whole staff of people down there doing nothing. All it is to simply abbreviate my middle name. My God, they're telling me no, they can't do it. My national ID card has all my middle initials on.
So, you know, sometimes the systems we set up and the way we set them up to be operated has to be all changed only by a systems change as opposed to simply changing items on the fly. It is unfortunate that to get your registration done, you had to use all four names. Maybe there were people with your other second and third names. I know at one point there were a lot of Jason Omars kicking around. So if you have four Jason Omars and your last name is the same as the other Jason Omar's, you'd be in a lot of trouble.
But hold on. Let me discuss the problem and the solution. I just need somebody to get
to change it.
Because at the end of the day, it is me that has to be suffering. It's me that will be coming there embarrassing myself. It's me that can't give my children nothing. You understand what I mean?
And unfortunately, when you're in there talking to somebody, that person may not be able to answer the phone. So the person calling on the phone, you know, we'll say that the phone just ringing. So you have these things.
But you can't, you know, Mr. Johnson, this is not good enough. You just can't have, you telling people you could call them, and you call, you suddenly you call in 3 and 4 hours, they can't get through. I go in there, we identify the problem, I gave you solutions, and this is 3 months going into the, you see, last year, November, December, January, no, there's 3 months now, here in 2017. I have to know nobody seems to, they don't care who the senator, they don't care who you're talking to, they don't call you back, nothing. And if I don't get up and go in there every month to see if I ain't get what belongs to me, Mr. Ellis, you know, Mr. Johnson, you know, nothing ain't gonna happen. I said, I tears coming in my head, I probably gonna got nothing to give my children. I mean, you want to see people standing behind a dress all pretty and this thing, and nails and they care with it. And they go coming in there and got nothing to give my children. I want to behind this and looking all pretty and formal, and nobody ain't getting up and doing what they got to do. These things is not fair in 2020. The national insurance take my number every time, every month I go in there, they take my number and say they'll call me back. I have never received a phone call yet.
Okay, sir. Well, let's see what happens. The Monday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Johnson.
Yes, it is.
Yes, sir. I need to make a little contribution this morning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a regular person goes to the beach on mornings. I passes the Martinez Road. I notice a trend going on there right by the lights where there's a zebra crossing and lights also for the students who go to that particular school in that area, Martinez Road. I notice that there's some parents, I don't want to be prejudiced, sir, but there are some parents that I realize, mostly female, not being prejudiced, stop at the lights while the lights is on green,
mm-hmm.
so that their kids can cross the street to go into school.
Mm-hmm.
It means that the traffic coming from the roundabout have to also start at the green light,
mm-hmm.
so these kids can cross to go to school. Sir, I would like to know from you, if you know, or if you can find out from me, what is the position with that? Because I could understand the white zebra cross, I could understand, yes, that's a definite stop. But if you have the white zebra cross, the crossing in white, also a traffic light there, but the light is on green, it's telling me
you're supposed
that the traffic
to
will keep flowing.
Correct. Until the lights turn red. So there are about five, on that particular strip of road, there were five zebra crossings. There's
right.
one as you come out of the roundabout. There's
exactly.
one of in front of the St. Michael's School. There's
right.
one in front of the hospital that's light controlled. There's
right.
one in the crossover between the hospital and the other side,
right.
where
well,
there's
well,
more,
more
medical, and more is. And
right.
then there's another one closer to the other roundabout. So there are five zebra crossings there. Two of them are light controlled. The one in front of the St. Michael's School, you can actually stop it. The
right.
other one in front of the hospital just flashes amber when you got across.
I got it. Right.
Now, so let me tell you, okay? For anybody to stop to let their children cross in a green light, it's training the child in the wrong way in the first place.
Sure, that's my take.
Because you're supposed to press the light, wait until the red.
Exactly.
And equally, people who drive through the red when it's on red because they ain't see anybody there also doing the wrong thing.
Exactly.
But that's the kind of bad behavior we
exactly.
have encouraged on our roads,
yeah.
and that's why we end up in the mess we're in.
And
then we call it ZR culture. Let me tell you something while you say this, right? This morning coming down Kalama Rock,
mm-hmm.
the traffic was backed up right up to the traffic lights by the NIS. You know what the problem was? Cars traveling in the extreme left lane, waiting until they pass Purity to cut into the right lane to come down to River Road. And stopping until somebody lets them in, so the traffic is backed up because nobody wants to let them in. I saw a double cab stop for, and I timed it, 4.5 minutes, blocking traffic. There was nothing in front of them to try to turn across, and nobody was letting them turn. I've seen cars come down there and turn across the double lines to get into Purity. I've seen cars turn the double lines to go into the school. I've seen
yeah.
cars turn across the double line to go through to where the disabilities unit now is. I've seen buses come through Sagicor
right.
and turn down Kalama Rock.
Yeah.
So it's the nonsense we do on the road that we train our children to do when
exactly.
we give them the cars.
Sir, that is one reason I'm calling you, because I want to know if this is golden rule that we are teaching the kids.
We're teaching them what we want to teach
next
them.
Next step is to drop the kids right in the classroom.
They may do that too.
That is the thing, because there's lights right there, and the lights is on green, and you stop your car and let your child get out across
the road.
And the green on the road, and so traffic got to stop on both ends for your child to cross. Why is this? I would like to know.
Selfishness.
You explained carefully. I listened to you very much so, but I would like to know from the law if this is not some kind of infringement, because if somebody happened to overtake, Lord know how or why, and that child get knocked down, what the situation would be? Because you got some people over there that ain't got that patience. Let me tell you, seven is a green light. You're not right, stop it and overtake. You know? So that's all I just wanted to put over there. And you know, to continue upon some of what you said, there's even at the roundabout itself before you get to the school, sometimes you can find traffic back up. And fellas will still come around there and block the road rather than wait till the traffic going towards Martinez Road clear, then he could cross over. But he would block the ones that are coming from Culloden Road, from the credit union, to go. They would block that, so that traffic got to stop. They got to stop anyway.
And it bottlenecks all over the place because of one single incident. You then get pile up around the roundabouts. You get cars trying to go 3-4 lanes to get around the roundabout because they're trying to get out of the way so that somebody could get across. It causes bottlenecks all over the place. As I said this morning, all down past Purity had the traffic backed up right up to the traffic lights up at the other end. Two lanes because of that.
One person.
Anyhow, so we will eventually get worked out. Somewhere along the line, perhaps when we have flyovers, I don't know. Brass Stacks, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Danny.
Yes, sir.
Every day we pay the price, we're the living sacrifice. I guess you're familiar with that. Mm-hmm. So, to some people,
I do.
To some people, they may sound like a stat record, right? But I would like people to put themselves in other people's situation. And government is indeed a continuum, you know, in relation to what our callers talk about, national insurance. Nothing don't really change. And I often ask myself, well, you can identify a problem. Just like people get paid by the authority. Let's say the authority have to go to four different people. And you find that at the third person, there's always a problem. Why not deal with that? Why people always try to make simple things look so hard? Why? What do they benefit from doing it? By making another person's life miserable? I often ask that question. But you know what? It's a waste of time asking questions, because you don't ever get more answers to the questions that's being asked. Now, I remember when this government came to office, and you know, if the other party was in power, I would go after them too. It was said that people who were in the government service 3 years or less are the ones who will be sent home. I have spoken to a number of people, mostly females, who had in 18, 20, 21 years sent home. I remember when Arthur said that people being in government for 4 years or more would be automatically appointed. It went to Parliament, it was passed, it was rectified, letters started coming out. When the last government came into office, they stopped. Now, my problem is, despite the letters stopped, doesn't mean that you don't qualify for appointment. It was made law. I spoke to a lady the other day who is on the verge, she and her husband, are losing their home. Can't pay the mortgage. All these kind of things that people are going through. And people, they shouldn't just talk to me, make these things public, let people, because there are some cases where everything might not be known. Why are these things happening? I hear people talking, especially one call. You always say, don't call in this, don't call in that.
who always come on the program talking about the achievements, how the government have done, and what they have achieved in such a short space of time. At whose expense? That's the question we're letting him to ask. At whose expense? These things are very serious, and they have to be listened to. Even the thing now with bringing back people on contract, why was it the people at Beautiful Barbados who were laid off, why weren't they given at least an offer, a choice to come back?
Because you want to give young people, you want to give young people and people who are linemen on the block and don't have anything to do an opportunity to get a little piece of the action. That's the reason why. The only one I could think of. So, I think you know, as a regular caller to this program, and the same way you referred to another caller, not by name, that people sometimes hear the caller and not the call. And therefore, whatever you say, whatever the value, goes missing because of who says it. It happens to moderators too. Because that's how we are, that's how we listen. It takes a while for people to understand sometimes that getting rid of the person making the comment again, rid of the person who says something is wrong, does not fix the problem. But that too is how we are in this country. So when you sit as a moderator and you're not part of the How Great Thou Art choir, or you don't lavish praise on any individual or any party, everybody takes a shot at you because they figure you're against them. That's how life works. I think you should know that by now. As I said, you do this regularly, so you should know. Brastex, good morning.
Hello. Good morning, Danny.
Yes, sir.
John Goddard.
Mr. Goddard, how are you, sir?
Yes. Recognize
not
how are you doing?
I'm doing all right.
I know you're busy this morning.
Really?
As usual. Yeah.
The calls are flowing.
I heard you discussing education with a caller earlier, and I found it very interesting. And you know my expertise is in that area. I just want to add a few comments to the question of educational reform. Mm-hmm. I am on record as saying, Dennis, that the education system in Barbados is operating on an archaic model. That is why so many children in our schools are coming out ill-equipped to work, and in fact, then they are unemployable. Because, you see, and I think you suggested it earlier, there is too much emphasis on so-called academic areas and very little on vocational and technical areas. We need this to do a manpower survey in Barbados and the Caribbean, because I see Barbadians and other Caribbean people as being able to work right across this region. We need to know what are the manpower needs in the Caribbean. What areas of study do we need to promote? And it doesn't mean that it's going to remain that way, because changes occur all the time. And we need to tailor the educational system to meet the varying needs of the various populations of this Caribbean region. I am also on record, Dennis, as indicating that the Common Entrance Examination, commonly called 11 Plus, has served this purpose. Dennis, you would not have been in Barbados at the time, but I think you might have similar situations across in from the countries where you live.
That
there was
like
a
what time
in Barbados when there were few teachers, few secondary school places, few teachers meaning so-called graduate teachers.
Mm-hmm.
What people thought were the top-of-the-line people, and we brought in a number of teachers from England and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was taught something because I had what is now, what is referred to, Dennis, as a grammar school education.
A lot of teachers did.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. So now,
Standard 7 boys.
What happened was, the country wanted to make sure that the brightest, and I put the inverted commas, of the children got exposed to these top-notch teachers, quote-unquote.
Mm-hmm.
It was dance, a lot of kids who came in, they didn't know anything, you know. But I ain't going to go into that now today. The point, though, is that an examination was necessary to sift the wheat from the tears. And sorry to refer people in that way, but you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. The point is that you wanted to make sure that the brightest children, the children with the greatest, showing the greatest promise, would be exposed to these persons. Well, gradually, of course, the school, the number of schools, secondary schools, increased. And schools like St. Leonard and Princess Margaret and Granny Adams, then known as West St. Joseph, were built. The thing, though, is that they were not really intended to offer the kind of secondary education that was being offered at the Lord Cobhamir and Harrison College. They were therefore seen from the very start as second-class schools, unfortunately. And the government seen it like that because what they did was to bring teachers, principals from the primary schools who were teaching in primary schools, made them principals of those schools. The curriculum reflected more the things like clothing and textiles, which of course those subjects are very important, and it was far sensitive to include those. But you see, Barbadians had been trained to believe that only certain subjects were important. So people did not send their children to those schools. They tried very hard to avoid them. And whatever few coppers they had, they would have paid the modern high school, the federal high school, the private schools, in other words, to send their children. But as time went on, Mr. Barrow came into the office, and he abolished fees in the older secondary schools. And, of course, more and more children started to get into schools. But the elitism continued so that the newer secondary schools, no matter how many good teachers they got, were still regarded as second-class institutions. Dennis, you may not know, but a number of our newer secondary schools have large numbers of teachers with master's degrees. There's no such thing as an unqualified teacher now in the
in the system, most of them,
right.
Are, yeah.
And therefore, the situation has changed. There is no need now to concentrate your brightest children in any group of schools and then dump, and I use the word intentionally, dump the children who score below 30% in other schools. Teachers with similar qualifications are required to teach the children in the elite schools as those in the newer secondary schools. But we continue because we have convinced ourselves that unless our children get to Queen's and Harrison College, they're not going to learn.
But I have to keep asking the question, who thinks that way? Who?
Who thinks that way?
Yeah.
A lot of our parents, especially the ones over 50, over 40 now.
Okay,
a lot of our who came along with the system, they believe, because I would tell you, Dennis, from my experience with children, a lot of children don't care. You know, we are forcing our children to do things. Our children are quite happy.
But sir, the question, the reason why I ask the question is this. I would like to see the statistics. I don't have them. I haven't seen them. But I'd like to see the statistics on how many of our parents, how many people are parents under the age of 40 in Barbados, and how many children they have, what schools they go to and why.
Right.
How many people over 40 still have children in the school system, why they chose those things and why. Because I'll tell you why I'm asking this. If, as you say, and I know it is close to fact, if not fact, that most, if not all, of our teachers are today qualified up to masters and more, it means, therefore, we have the resources to place teachers into school environments that we consider to be in need of remedial work and further work to bring those children in those schools up to whatever level we require them to get up to in whatever they're capable of doing. It may call for a reorganization and a change in the construct of the school, making the classroom smaller, making them more interactive, whatever. But it may call for that. But it means we have the personnel qualified to do it. Now, the second thing we have to do then is to make it desirable for them to do it. So give them incentives, stagger the hours, change the way they work. Because, sir, if we know what the problem is, and this is the thing that bugs the living daylights out of me, we keep saying, oh, the problem is the education system. The problem is this. The problem is stigmatization. The problem is the fellows in the block. And we're not putting together a how do we fix the problem step by step by step by step. Rather than just having think tanks, 30 people getting together in a room, everybody sharing, producing a white paper, a green paper, a blue paper. Because it's not fixing the problem. And we keep going back to this. It's in their mind and they like the school. It can't be with the way we solve the problem, sir.
But then it's being Barbados don't like fixing the problems. We talk about the problems. You don't realize that. You don't realize that Barbados is one big massive talk shop. You know how many reports.
And
many
it is unfortunately when those of us who try to put some semblance of systematic thought into what we do, I get told you're boring, you're criticizing the government, you're the complainer of the year. So it to me, you know, I can go and debush.
You see, because of the system is, remediation has to begin in the primary schools. Otherwise, once the 11 plus continues to be the benchmark by which you measure all of our children's achievements and so on, our primary schools are going to concentrate on that exam, because if you would notice, Dennis, you're in the media, you would notice that every year at Common Entrance, when the results are to come back, we have to have the minister announcing them, and schools are graded according to results. We talk with the top 10 schools, and everybody wants to get in the top 10, so what do? You concentrate on the children who show the greatest likelihood of going to Harrison College in Queens. Everybody wants to say that, oh, my school, you know, Dennis, let me give it a go. When I was teaching at St. George Secondary, because, you know, I taught at the one at the council at the bottom and the one at the council at the tippy top, as Bazin would say. I went to both St. George and Harrison College. I was asked to deliver the graduation address at a primary school. And Dennis, I was teaching at St. George Secondary. When the principal read out his report, he said, he talked about where the children were going, and then he said, thank God we only have one for St. George Secondary. Can you imagine that?
I could.
And not only that, you know, let me tell you something else. The lady who, the teacher who was handing out the prizes was a graduate from St. George Secondary.
I would have turned and go home.
It was this, but well, I was, Dennis, oh, well, I
would have turned and go home.
I spoke about it, but I mean, I felt worse for the teacher than I felt, and the child than I felt for myself, because I really don't care. And the teacher, you could see her face change completely. But he had no sensitivity to the thing, because he was so deep and grinning at him that, you know, these schools, my children went to Grange, Harrison College and so on. But anyway, the point that I'm making to you is that if you were, you talk about getting the qualified teachers going into the secondary schools and bringing up tomorrow.
Hmm.
If you wait until that, Dennis, you would have a large number of children who are turned off. Our children, by 11 years, are turned off from learning. That's why they go into the schools, particularly in your secondary schools, carry empty bags to school. You may not know that, except for a knife or whatever they can carry, or marijuana or whatever. They go into the schools, no books, and their parents, Dennis, parents in Barbados tell the children, you let me down. And they don't pay us petty fees. They do not give the children pens. They don't give them games clothes. So the children are made to feel that they are complete failures and nobody cares about them. So what do you expect them to do? They go into the schools. They roam the school grounds. They play a truant. And they prepare themselves to graduate to the blocks.
Well, sir, if that is what we want to perpetuate, if that's what we want to continue to do, and as you say, just talk about it, well, we can have plenty to talk about. Plenty to talk about. This is Dr. Brass Stacks.